Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to Brain Injury Radio Network. Tonight is our regular Wednesday installment of our program Recovery Now with your host, Kim Justice. If you'd like to know more about my story, you can find it at inaflash.org. I, too, am a fellow traumatic brain injury survivor. I appreciate you tuning in tonight, and as always, I look forward to your input. So now, we'll get on with the show. Well, hello, and happy hump night from somewhere in Middle America. I normally play the generic intro. That'll teach me to book a month all in one day. Focus. We'll be talking a little bit about that in this show. The last Wednesday of every month, I'm not only your regular host, Kim Justice, but now for years, the last Wednesday has been devoted to our Simon Says segment, and that became a new reality, like we're going to talk about tonight, when I discovered Simon Lewis. And he was a guest on the show and decided that he would make a wonderful co-host. And he was gracious enough to say yes. And we've been clicking along, and you guys have been giving me great feedback ever since. So if you want to know more about Simon, you can find him. He's written a wonderful book, audio by Kelsey Grammer. I've been telling you guys that I've been watching some old TV shows to kind of lighten things up, and we've been watching Frasier, and Kelsey Grammer actually narrated Simon's book, also in hard copy. But anyway, you can find more about Simon at riseandshinethebook.com or Simon Lewis, L-E-W-I-S, at simonlewis.us. And I'm going to bring him on in just a moment. For those of you who may be new around here, Recovery Now is a gathering place for anyone seeking recovery from the challenges of life on life's terms. Guests share their experience, strength, and hope. We discuss useful tools that have helped us lighten the load of our journey through recovery. More will be revealed. This is a we recovery program because it is in the we that we find the new me. We focus on the four A's of recovery: awareness, acceptance, action, and adaptation. This is a place for survivors striving to become thrivers. And for that, it takes a good bit of warrior. So, with that, I guess what I wanted to say, we were going to talk about, I'm going to bring Simon on in just a moment, but when we get a brain injury, well, we're going to talk about that, but bottom line is it creates a new reality. And with everything that everybody, including people that don't have brain injury, have been going through the last year and a half, however long it's been so long, I'm losing track. It's just all kind of blurring together. A lot of people, we've all been facing a new reality, and it might be a new reality that creates a change even when the pandemic and the politics are resolved, because it's been so intense and so long and put us all in a very vulnerable place. Now, we with brain injury knew a little something about being quarantined, so to speak, So we learned to entertain ourselves, maybe didn't go quite as crazy as some of the non-survivors out there when we had to stay home. But we did have a new reality and had to go through the paces of learning how to recognize it, accept it, and live as happy life, as happy of a life as we could in that new reality. That's what we're going to be talking about tonight. But then I added an aside. I didn't want to make the show. We've had shows talking about COVID because it's been going on a long time. But we haven't had a show, and this isn't going to be a whole show, on the vaccine. Because at this point, most of us who are going to have had one vaccine, maybe two vaccines. And I've been hearing a little rumbling out there in the brain injury community on social media, and then had my own experience. And so we're going to talk a little bit about the vaccine tonight. And I had posted all over social media where I post this show that if you've had your vaccine, or vaccines as it might be, and had any kind of side effect that was different than what you read on the disclosure, you know, sore arm, yeah, we all got that, shots, we'll do that for you. It left some other ones, maybe a little fever, maybe this, maybe that. It gave a couple of things. But I noticed in the brain injury rooms that there were some other side effects that seemed to be popping up and that I experienced myself. And of course, when a vaccine comes, I'm going to bring Simon on, but of course, when a vaccine comes for emergency use here, I'm going to go ahead and bring him on. Simon, how are you doing tonight?
Well, Kim, it's all the best of hearing you. So I will say a couple of things. I have to say, first of all, new reality is every day for me as a brain injured person. A big part of my new reality for several years has been the chance to come on this program, because what you're doing is so helpful, including tonight. I think the whole idea of reaching out for feedback from people with brain injury who've had the vaccine, and everything we're talking about is, for me, is pro-vaccine. Not because it's a solution in itself, but because it's an extraordinary thing that it's been made available so quickly. And I think it's really valuable to have this forum to talk about. So I want to say a big shout out to Brain Injury Radio for having these kinds of conversations and the new reality of you being a part of making that new reality for me. The other thing I'll say about new reality is, before we get into the details of symptoms, is I was thinking about the sheer beauty of it all and how everybody who listens to the show regularly knows I've been going through a process called guided tissue regeneration. And what's going on is that bone grafts in my jaw, gradually, little stem cells in my blood are getting caught in the bone graft they're putting in. And one cell at a time, they express into a new reality, which is that as a stem cell, everybody knows it could become anything. And when it gets trapped in the bone graft material in my jaw, they get to choose, and they choose to express themselves into the new reality of another bone cell of me. It's my own bone that I'm basically gradually building up. And the relevance to tonight's show is that I think it's almost a metaphor for new reality, because in a sense, each cell has that choice as to what it becomes. And I feel that we are a combination, an expression of all the cells that make us up, plus, if you're religious, plus that element of the soul. All of us every cell in our, within us is trying to make a new reality every day. And I think that the brain injury community knows that perhaps better than many communities, because we have to make a new reality each day for ourselves. So it's kind of a beauty from the individual cell up to us as complete people. And when I say complete people, I'm recognizing that there are people with brain injury who can't move their arms or they can't move their legs. But within themselves, they remain a complete person. So for all of us, there is this choice each day to make a new reality.
Absolutely. And I wanted to give out, I guess I didn't in the beginning, we're going to talk a little bit about the vaccine first, and then we're going to go on and talk about new reality in general, being a brain injury survivor and and so forth. I was just thinking to myself, sorry, I kind of lost myself there. And it's kind of funny with that. I had told Simon before that I was looking for this graphic that I kept in my phone so it would be handy. But those of you who know me on Facebook know that I take a bazillion, gatrillion pictures and with my camera, but also with my phone when I just want to, I'm not worried as much about quality or I just got to get a quickie. Normally I have my camera to get good pictures with me, but in any case, I had something because when I first started doing this 10 years ago, the radio show, I came on as a survivor who didn't know anything, unlike Simon, who had done exhaustive research. I knew nothing but my own story, and I didn't fully understand it. And as I did the shows in the first year, I noticed some common refrains coming up in each of the guests and the callers and so forth that would come on that described brain injury. And I started making a list, and there are 12 things. And one thing I would say, and then I'm going to drop back. I guess I'm hopping all over the place tonight. I was going to give you the phone number, which I will. If you've had the vaccine and you'd like to make a comment about the vaccine or had any different sort of reaction, anything like that you'd like to talk about, the number is 424-243-9540. Again, 424-243-9540. And I'll be repeating that here and there just so you have it if you'd like to call. But in my observation, not every brain injury survivor has all 11, of these things, but every brain injury survivor I've ever talked to has a few of these things. And so thus I compiled the list many years ago. But short-term memory loss, trouble focusing our attention, neurofatigue, meaning running out of energy, dizziness or balance issues, cognitive deficits, for example, processing slower than we did before, aphasia, example, trouble recalling or understanding words, not being able to handle overstimulation, people, noises, light, anxiety, sometimes over the slightest things, depression, chronic pain disorders. Now, all of those things, now number 12 would be the folks that have physical impairments as a result of their brain injury. So that would make and even dozen. Now, with that one, you have a tell. But the other 11, other people don't know those are the invisible parts of our new reality. We look the same, and some people talk the same, some people don't, depending on their injury, but fundamentally we look the same, and there's an expectation from ourselves and from those around us that after the initial crises that we're going to go back to being like we were before. And nobody wishes more than us that we could have done that. But for an awfully large percentage of us, that's not how it works. So tonight, we'll be talking about a new reality. And of those 12 things I just mentioned, and I'm going to ask Simon about it, like I said, I didn't know anything except my own story when I started out here. But as I heard people talking and these things kept coming up over and over and over again, I was like, good God, I've got short-term memory loss. I have trouble focusing my attention. Good Lord, do I have neuro fatigue a lot. Dizziness and balance issues, not so much, but I will share when I got my vaccine that I did have, and I'll give you an antidote afterward, processing things slower than before, cognitive deficits, I have those. Trouble recalling words more as far as aphasia. I understand words now. I didn't when I was stroking out. I couldn't understand anything, but my takeaway is that I can understand words, but I do have trouble recalling them a lot. Overstimulation. I call it full basket syndrome. It's another manifestation of overstimulation. A lot of noise, you know, when I used to be able to be in a room where there was a party and maybe a number of different voices or conversations going on, or the light was too bright, you know, that would cause me difficulty. Are you shredding paper, Simon?
Oh, no. Oh, I'm so sorry, Kim. Oh dear, wait a minute. No, I really apologize.
It's okay. I just heard it and I thought, are you, what?
No, I'll explain. This is, I'm afraid, well, now I've learned a very important thing, which is that I press a button on my thing, which is supposed to mute the sound, but it didn't mute the sound. So I'm being very respectful, but when we do the show at this time of the year, the sun is setting and it's really, I sort of fry because I sit by a window. So what I did was I have a blind that electrically lowers so that I can quietly, as I thought I was quietly raising the blind because the sun has set here now. And now my cover is blown. And I feel terribly embarrassed.
Don't. It's just funny. I was on Handle Overstimulation talking about people and noises, and then that noise started happening, and I was like, okay, folks, that was live how it happened. Simon, are you shredding paper?
Yeah, and now the truth is out. But the good news is that now that the blind is up, I have more light, so I won't start falling asleep, because when it gets dark, I have this whole thing about light where I have special lights that if the lights, I have the lights turned up full, and so they're daylight adjusted, so it's like I'm sitting in sunlight. So as many listeners will know, And just like you're saying, Kim, a lot of these things are not visible from the outside. So yeah. Kim understands when I say about if I were to sit here now with fluorescent lights on, I would get a terrible headache in a couple of hours. But with the daylight lights, but no, I would never shred paper. But I will tell you, I must investigate as to why my mute button didn't work, because I don't understand why it sounded like I was, but it won't happen again. But I will investigate what went wrong. I apologize, Kim. And thank you for telling
me. Okay.
The listeners must think I'm, yes, actually I'm destroying important records because the feds are about to raid me, you know?
You and Giuliani, I guess.
But as I say, no, I'm sorry, Kim, but may I actually speak to these issues that you're describing? Because
yes,
in terms of,
I wanted you to, because when I'll just say in closing that of those 11 things that I read, I actually have all 11 of those things at one time or another. And I mean, I live with them from day to day back since 1995. And so I just thought it was interesting that I learned that from people calling in, and those things kept reoccurring to the point that it made me want to start making a list. And so that was the list of 11 things. There's probably more or less, but when I thought of this 10 years ago, you know, over that first and second year, it was occurring to me that I was doing this show. I started jotting down some things I kept hearing over and over, and I could certainly relate to, because I realized that it was like a mirror. They were actually things that I experienced with my brain injury too. So, like I said, not everybody with a brain injury has struggles with all of those things, but all brain injury survivors I've ever have a few of those things.
I would say for me, Kim, it's a very helpful list. And yes, I would say that all of these have been issues for me since my vaccine. And I believe that, to put it in the broader context, I've read a lot about the consequences of this whole virus. And I knew from a very early stage that it was circulatory. That is some consequences in terms of the blood flow and the lymphatic flow through our bodies. And for regular listeners, when this all began, you may recall on an earlier show, because it's fantastic, Kim, that we've been doing this for several years now. It's fantastic. It's so great to know you. I would never have known you but for my brain injury. So, but very early on, there was a group of about 15 real estate people who left Los Angeles on a fun trip. And it was when early on there was a major outbreak in Italy. They suffered very badly, if you recall. And the thing I took away from that article, I'll be brief because I'm repeating something you said a couple of years ago when this all began, or 18 months ago. The two takeaways were that all 18 of the people came back positive. And that staggered me, because it means wherever they were exposed, 18 men, and I think women too, I can't remember now, but they were all infected. That is an astounding level of infectiousness, that contact infected all of them. And the other thing was, the focus of the article, which is unfortunately with the media, there's always the gotcha part of the media, which is to trip people up. And then there's the ray of hope part of the media story, which is you've got to find something positive. So what they focused on was the one guy, because some of the people in the group never came back from Italy because they went into ventilators in Germany or in Italy. They didn't make it back. I mean, who knows what their ultimate case outcome was. But the one guy they focused on was this older man, 74, 75 years old, whose wife was serving him food out in his bedroom because he couldn't move through his house. He was completely in lockdown before the term lockdown was even introduced. He had been told, because I suppose that all 19 of them were infected, not to have any contact with his wife. So his wife would leave food outside his bedroom door. And they commented that he was doing better, and they thought, an older person, he was doing better because he had a very healthy diet, and he would walk a long way each day. He did exercise every day. And I started encouraging people, if it's in their community, to isolate and exercise every day, keep the blood moving through the system, because that also moves the lymphatics. So I knew early on that's where this was going. And the brain is profoundly affected by anything that affects circulation. And I would believe, and I'm not a doctor, we always do this disclaimer, I'm not a doctor, I'm just offering my perspective on my experience and what Kim is describing as her experience, which is that people who had brain injury have experienced a couple of things. They've experienced an awareness of your own mortality, because very often the event that occurred might have killed you, and that changes you. And I believe it partly changes you because there's been an effect on the circulation of blood and spinal fluid and lymphatic fluid to the parts of you that makes you feel like you. And it seems to me that anything that is linked to circulation, we as a community are particularly susceptible to. So flashing now to the present, recent present, and your question, Kim, about these symptoms, I've experienced all of these since my vaccine. Some of these have been things that I haven't experienced since soon after my catastrophic hit and run in 1994. But because I wrote Rise and Shine, I still remember them. But one in particular is that I've experienced some of these symptoms simultaneously, which is to say that I have felt both cold and hot at the same time. I have felt depression and elation would be the wrong word. Euphoric, I think, would be the word.
Yeah,
euphoric and depressed at the same time. So as if my brain is confused and sending off all of these different signals. Some of them are the most disturbing. And I'm saying this in case people listening are experiencing this. Are the feelings of dizziness and alienation or detachment? Because I have been feeling very detached and alienated. Not in the sense of not liking people, but just not feeling that I'm really present. And that when I speak to Susanna on the phone, I feel like she's in the room with me. So I'm both absent, and yet I've lost a little bit of the sense of separation that, oh, when I'm talking to somebody on the phone, I'm actually not with them. So I actually feel like I'm with you, Kim, right now, sitting in the same room as you. I've lost sense of context. It's a bizarre kind of a thing. Sleep disorders, yes. And I think I've covered all of them, but anxiety, definitely. This morning, just to come to recent, I have been feeling really tired. I mean, just off the end of the scale tired. Some of this may be tied in with the issue I talked about last month, where I've been diagnosed with something called CAA, which is an aneurysm. So there's an element of that, which is, I suspect, is also amplifying the effect of the vaccine. And as for the idea that the effects last 1 to 2 weeks, the vaccine that I received has shown that the immune response is building for 29 days, which you and I might call a month. But they do these studies very carefully. And the company, the pharmaceutical company, is saying that they have found that there is an increasing response up to 29 days. And for people who are reading about people that have been vaccinated and yet got sick, there is a temptation to say, you know what, I'm done, I'm through. I've had my first shot or I've had both shots and are exposed. And if you're exposed before the thing has kicked in, before the immune response has built as much as possible, it is entirely foreseeable scientifically that you would still get COVID because you got to give the troops time to assemble. The body is this amazing analog system. Because we spend a lot of time sitting at computers, I think it's easy to fall into a trap of thinking that everything is yes, no, it's binary. The computer is working, it's not working. The answer is yes or the answer is no. When you go online, a lot of the websites are designed to encourage you to buy things, and everything is about, did your credit card clear or not clear? So more and more we're sort of lulled into this binary equation. But when it comes to our bodies, it's analog. There are a range of responses, and down on a biological level, things need time to respond in an analog way. They need to experience a provocation from whichever vaccine you've taken or been injected with. There's kind of a provocation. And your immune system needs to find a response to that and needs to develop and evolve. It needs to call for resources to be provided. And the body's immune system starts to respond and to provide supplies. So if you don't give time the window that they tell you and abandon social isolation and abandon masks, it only takes a little bit of exposure for this thing to get in. And later in the show, we can talk about, there's been a wonderful piece of research that was published yesterday, which I told Kim about before the show, which I want to share at some point because it will explain why it's important not to be complacent. There's a lot of good news now out there, but it's important to have a vaccination that works for you in terms of your doctor's advice. And it's very important to give it time to build your immune response up to give you the best shot so that, as I put it to this very special lady in my life, Susanna, that we make it through this with a smile in our eyes and a kiss on our lips. I think that's a worthy, for me and for Susanna, that's a very worthy goal. And too many people have fallen. And I also believe spiritually that it's a little bit of a disservice to the many hundreds of thousands in the United States. I think, I'm not sure of the number now, but we're well over 500,000, well over 500,000, and so many around the world. It's a little bit of a disservice to the ones who have fallen that did not make it through. And it's a little bit of a disservice to the many, many people who have had life-changing complications from COVID to sort of go back to business as usual and run the risk of catching this and even worse, spreading it to other people when we're on the way to perhaps making some really solid progress. Now that's, but in terms of all of these disorders, Kim, I'll just come back to what you're saying. I think that people with brain injuries are more susceptible. I'm looking forward to callers if they call in. I've had all of the items on your list, not so much aphasia, but I would say only in the sense that I have been asleep so much of the day, the fatigue. I've been sleeping until 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon, and it was not easy to get ready for this program by 7 p.m.
Right.
And as of this morning, I woke up, which I've never heard referred to as a side effect. Now I had mine April 10th, so I'm heading towards 29 days. But I woke up this morning entirely stiff. All of my joints were stiff, as if I had the flu or was recovering from the flu, consistent with the areas of my body that manufacture antibodies are working very hard so that during the night, I got really stiff in my joints, which if you recall, if you have a bad cold or you have a bad flu, sometimes you really feel it in your joints because I think they're called the nodes. They expand because they're busy making antibodies. And when they expand, they press on the nerves that are surrounding them. And you feel that pressure as pain or stiffness.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. Now, the reason we're doing this, I just want to reiterate that, and we will be moving into a new reality, which is our topic. So, but I thought it was important. And the 11 things I read weren't about the vaccine. They're about brain injury in general. The things
yes.
that we as brain injury survivors have some or all of the things on that list. And yes, some of them have been amplified for people after they've had their vaccine. With me, you know, and the only reason I'm bringing up a couple of things, and then I want to clarify it, and then I want Simon to read his article and tell us what that's about, but is not to discourage anybody from getting the vaccine at all. But when you get the paper that they give you after you get your vaccine, they're supposed to be giving you a piece of paper, you know, it gives some possible side effects. And I noticed in some of the brain injury chat rooms and with myself that I had some very odd things that were not on the list, and so did a lot of people who had brain injuries, and they go away, and you know, one thing I can say, I'm going to tell you about a couple of mine, but well, I'll do that first, and then I'm going to back up before I throw it back over to Simon. But after I had a two-shot deal, and after the first one, and I had heard that people who got really sick for a couple of days, it was normally the second shot. I kept hearing that. And after the first shot, I felt great right after the shot. I've said this last week, they were Krispy Kreme. If you've got that donut chain in your area, was if you drove through and flashed your vaccine, they gave you a free donut. And my husband and I went and both got our vaccines. And so we were in the car and we kind of put our heads together and held up our donut on opposite eyes like a monocle and smiled. And I was happy the shot didn't hurt. When I heard intramuscular, I thought that was going to be really ouchy, like a tetanus shot or something, but it wasn't. It was just a little prick, no big deal. I felt fine, whatever. And then that night, a headache started building and building and building. And my usual headache, while it can be a full-on headache, a lot of times it's kind of trails where my injury was. You know, it'll be like little lightning bolts over my eyebrows, you know, over my forehead, and then my whole head hurts, a headache, or it'll be the left side of my face sometimes. That's my normal headache, but this was a headache that was definitely full on my head, but the back of my head, and I've heard this come up more than once, is why I wanted to mention it after it happened to me. I read it in a couple chat rooms that people had an excruciating headache that pounded the back of their head. And it didn't happen to be where any of us got injured. I don't know what that's about, but if that happens to you, it's happened to others that are in brain injury community. And one reason I'm bringing this up is there wasn't anybody with a compromised immune system in the clinical trials. And so the things that are there as possible side effects, for some of us, there might be a few others. And then I'm going to go on and say, I'm not going to discourage you, but after that headache, the next day, I took a nap because fatigue seems to be pretty common with everybody that gets this shot. The sore arm and the fatigue, I haven't heard many people that haven't had that, I mean, brain injury or not. And so I laid down and I fell into a really deep sleep for a nap. And when I woke up, I was walking down the hallway and it was like suddenly this sensation of the old-fashioned funhouse where the hallway was tilted and I felt like I was walking sideways up a hill, you know, across the hill, a slanted hill. It was the weirdest thing. It was like the room shifted. And I got to tell you, that headache the night before actually scared the crap out of me only because, you know, I had a ruptured brain aneurysm and that headache frightened me to death because that was one of the worst headaches that I've had. Now, the funhouse experience was weird for sure. And I'd say scary, except it didn't last long because I got up against the wall and took some deep breaths and just waited and it passed. You know, it passed. It didn't stay that way. But that was the trippiest sensation to get up and start walking down my hallway toward, you know, from the bedroom to the bathroom and have everything tilt. It was just the weirdest sensation ever. And then a couple days later, it was. But thankfully, like I said, it only lasted long enough to get my attention, but then it stopped. So that didn't keep going or anything. That headache went on for 6 hours. That funhouse experience went on for a couple of minutes. And when I just stopped and quit moving and took some deep breaths, it passed, and I was glad because that was just a weird sensation. The night before was a scary sensation. That one was just a weird one. And then, like a lot of people, probably 3 days into it, but the thing that was weird, you talked about this a minute ago a little bit, but I got up and felt fine when I got up. Usually, you know, when I'm going to get a cold or something, I know it when I wake up, you know, because you wake up, maybe you've had some sinus drainage and you have a little sore throat or you wake up not feeling well. That didn't happen. I felt fine when I got up, but probably about noon, all of a sudden, I started feeling punkish, and that led to having a sore throat and swollen glands in my neck, and my nose was stuffy, and my ears were hot, and again, I thought, wow, that's weird. You know, that's not usually, I mean, that's weird. Anyway, I took a decongestant, and I decided to go lay down for a while, and I woke up and I felt fine. That was the fastest cold I ever had. So that went away. Okay, so these are some of the things after the first shot I experienced. Now, after the second shot, and in 4 days on Sunday will be the end of my 2 weeks after the second shot, which I was told then you were quote-unquote fully covered. But after the second shot, the weird thing, the scary thing, I guess, for me was I got, and this was probably, I felt fine for a couple days after that shot. And I thought, wow, for me, I've done a lot of things backwards in my life. I guess it was my first shot. you know, not the second shot, like everyone says that I had weird reaction to. But no, on the third day I had, and you know, I've got chronic pain issue. I got fibromyalgia, some kind of bad arthritis also that I've got to go get diagnosed sometime. Exactly what kind it is, I just haven't been in a hurry because I don't want to take any more drugs, but very painful. But one place I've never been bothered is my hip. And I got this sharp pain in my left hip that just knocked the air out of me, out of nowhere. I guess I had a little bit of, like, around from your hip, the small of your back there, the soft part of your back. And I've got spinal and cervical stenosis, so I'm used to, if I have a back thing, it's my spine and my neck that hurt. But this was in the soft area of your lower back that it had been aching a little since I got that shot. But I didn't think much of it. And then all of a sudden, boom, on the third day, this piercing left hip pain shot through there. And I could barely walk. It was really scary. I could barely walk. And
oh my God.
I had that the intensity of that pain went on for a few hours, but the hip pain, not as intense, but it was there for, pardon me, for a couple of days. And I found that most curious because, like I said, hip hasn't been a place I've ever had a problem. You know, knee, shoulder, neck, yes, never my hip. And then I got a rash across my lower back and had that for about 3 days. And I wound up putting Benadryl cream on it. So I can't say that my time during this shot experience has been a Sunday picnic, but I will go on to say that today, you know, the rash is gone and the hip pain is gone. I still have a little bit in my lower back, but I spoke today, and then I'm going to have Simon talk about his article. I am glad that I have the shot behind me. Those things that happened, but they went away. I'm going to go to my texts for just a minute because I have a friend I've talked about the alternative to the shot, getting the COVID. I've talked about a friend of mine who got COVID about a year ago and has been hospitalized like 13 times with pneumonia. I mean,
oh my dear. Oh my.
COVID just kicked her ass, excuse me, did some real damage to her lungs, and getting breathing treatments 3 times a day in between getting pneumonia and being hospitalized. Now, I was looking for the name of this. They had to do an open lung biopsy on her.
Mm.
And you want to talk about something creepy and extremely painful. They did a scan and they saw a haze, something they didn't recognize, not a mass, a haze. And they wanted to explore further what that was. And the only way to do it was with this open biopsy. And it turned out that she it's a, I'm trying to find the name of it, but it's a fungus. And she's going to be taking an antifungal treatment, could be for up to a year. And I said to her, I was trying to find the name of this fungus, and if I can find it, I guess we texted a little longer than I thought, but because I asked her right when I wrote, and then I said, and they're sure that, okay, here it is. It's called Barrett's esophagus. They think it's a fungus, and they think it could be related to something called Barrett's esophagus, is what she said. And she's going to be getting another endoscope at the end of May, but, you know, the idea behind it, because I said, how can you get a fungus when your lungs are that damaged? And apparently they're porous. It's a porous organ. And after it's been through as much as hers have been through, the bacteria and fungus can penetrate into the organ when it's gotten as severely damaged as hers has. And so, you know, this getting COVID for people who got it and thought it was like the flu, you know, they got it and then it went away, they were most fortunate people, because there's other people, I know three personally, who have died. Not, these aren't ones just that I've heard of or other people on the news you hear of, but I personally know three people who have passed away. And this friend of mine, that'll, by the time she's done with the fungal treatment, she could be 2 years after her COVID, and who knows what she might be dealing with in between or after, or how long this will lead. It obviously damaged her lungs badly and has been a horror show, much worse than my 2 weeks of odd and ends after my vaccine. And so another person here I wrote to check on today, I didn't know, she hadn't said that her husband had gotten COVID right away, but when I had occasion to talk to her on the phone about something unrelated, she told me that her husband had gotten COVID and it had attacked his heart. Now, he's had 3 heart operations over the last 4 months, I guess, and he might ultimately, excuse me, be looking at a transplant situation. So much damage. So I guess I'd just like to emphasize, I'm not a cheerleader for pharmaceuticals, but it appears that these side effects may be different for us who have our immune systems are compromised, or our circulatory system is compromised. So we might experience something a little different that is on the sheet that you're given when you leave after getting the vaccine, due to our brain injuries and the way we process the medication. But for me, I've known enough people in the, and I know a few others and I won't go into it, but I've known now, you know, when this started, like Simon was talking about, I was hearing it all on the news. I didn't know anybody, you know, that had COVID in the beginning. And now, you know, a year later, I know 3 people that have died, one that looks like she's going to have permanent lung issues, one that might have a permanent ongoing heart issue. and some with other problems. I know someone who had a stroke. So when I think, you know, you talk about the circulation, I think that's absolutely true. And this seems to be, someone else I know wound up with damaged kidneys and is now having to get kidney dialysis. And they might be looking at getting a new kidney. So getting COVID is no joke, you know. For anyone out there who thinks it's just like the flu, it might be for a couple people. But, boy, there's some stakes out there. I know personally that I would not want to risk. So, you know, I've noticed on the news that the vaccines have slowed down for a moment. There was a rush to the vaccine when they first came out for the people that were going to get them, people like a lot of us who had underlying conditions and were afraid if we got COVID, we'd be dead ducks, and wanted that extra layer of protection. So for a while there, the vaccines were going like gangbusters. And now the news reporting locally and nationally is that it's slowed down. The supply and demand thing was an issue before, and now states like ours and Iowa next door and a couple other states I've heard of aren't ordering more. They were like ordering vaccine, getting new shipments of vaccine every week to keep up with the demand, and they're not doing that now, which means that some of the people who were on the fence have maybe decided that they're not going to get the vaccine. They've maybe heard, you know, the J&J story. That was not a secret. That was on the news. Pfizer, there was recently one that, and I had the Pfizer. There was a couple things that just came out about that. There's been a couple that have come out about Moderna. But again, I guess I would just say that every medication we take and every vaccine we get has possible side effects, but they're talking about maybe 15 people out of, you know, 800,000. And I guess this is all a risk, but I would rather risk the vaccine and the extra protection than what I've seen of the COVID. And so this is not at all to discourage you, but just to give you a heads up. Because just like with our brain injury or anything that happens, when we think we're the only one, it's scary and polarizing. So I wanted to give a heads up that I've heard a couple people talking about some things similar to what I just talked about, and some of mine were different, and some of theirs were different. But they were things that weren't on the sheet. So we might have a little bit different side effects. I encourage you to report them. I really need to do that. I tried calling the COVID. They've had a COVID hotline, but, you know, they must have got so many calls that they're not answering it now. They're like referring you to a message board kind of thing. So I think I would encourage you to at least report it to your doctor, because that's the way the scientists are going to learn moving forward. And I'm pretty sure, again, Simon qualified it. I'm not going to beat a dead horse, but we aren't doctors. But I'm guessing that, like we have a flu shot every year, that, you know, especially if people don't wind up getting the shot and we don't get to this herd immunity, you know, I'm pretty sure that we're probably going to be having a, you know, getting a flu shot if we choose to, and getting a COVID shot each year for a while until this is under control. So it's good that we report these things so that the scientists working on the vaccines can do what they do with the flu shot. You know, they make a tweak or an adjustment, maybe, to it, and they learn from it. So do let somebody know about those things, but I wouldn't be necessarily overly nervous about it if your after effects are a little bit different. Obviously, you would know to seek medical treatment if it's something that you intuitively know is over the top, but in my case, these things passed. It was different and an uncomfortable couple of weeks because it seemed like every other day something was coming up. But now at the end of the thing, the rash is gone, the hip is gone, it's all gone, and I'm glad to have it. And, you know, like one of the news channels is acting, I don't agree with them because they pretty well explained it in the beginning. And yes, it's been very frustrating. Simon touched on the news and the goalposts getting moved all the time. And people not really knowing. And I think people have thrown up their hands. They've, you know, gotten COVID fatigue because this has been going on so long, and then have heard so many different things, and the rules changing all the time, and Fauci changing what he says, and the CDC changing what they, you know, I mean, there's people just sick of it. But, you know, they were saying if people have had shots, if they've had their vaccine and it's kicked in, you know, why do we still need to wear the masks? You know, what a ridiculous thing. And they've got a whole narrative that goes with that. But I would say maybe they weren't listening, because the way that I understood it, and I could be wrong, but I understood that we needed to get about 80% herd immunity. And we have about 40% at this point. And there might be a percentage from the vaccine, people that have completed their vaccines, about 40%, and there might be some people who have some natural immunity from antibodies from having COVID, but we're not at the 80% yet. So my understanding is the reason why we would still be, even after, you know, your month or my 2 weeks or whatever, why we will continue to wear a mask inside and in big crowds and still try to do some social distancing and being vigilant with the hygiene and all of that kind of thing, is that our vaccines are an extra layer of protection, number one. They're still 95% effective or whatever the percent for your vaccine. So that leaves a little bit of a door open. And it's going to be a while until we reach herd immunity, whether that's through people, I hope, reconsidering and getting the vaccines. You know, and if the government, I won't get into politics, but if they pursue this vaccine passport thing, more people will be forced to get a shot whether they want to or not, if they ever want to go do anything that's in a group. If they ever want to see another concert or NFL game or whatever, a job in certain places. The government says they have nothing to do with it, but they're doing the outline for the private sector to be able to make the decision. And, you know, in some places, I'm really torn on this. And then I am going to shut up and just let Simon have it. It'll keep him awake since it's starting. I'll talk till it's dark.
No,
and Simon will have to talk to keep himself awake. But, you know, I'm torn on that because on one hand, I am super independent and I don't like to be told what to do. I've practiced these safety protocols and been in for about a year because I'm scared to death of COVID. And I haven't wanted to take chances doing it. So I haven't been one of those people that's been out running around acting like nothing's going on. I mean, I don't know how many people have had their heads sawed open, but, you know, I've been through hell in my life. And I've just talked to you about some of my friends and what I've been checking in on them because I care about them, the things that they're going through from having gotten COVID. And, you know, the gal I was telling you about, she was only with her family. And so when they talk about, when they used to talk about a spike after family gatherings, you know, the holidays and so forth, that's when she happened to get it. A few of her siblings got it, and they got super sick, but not for the rest of their life like her, you know, family of about 20 people that still continued to get together for all the holidays and live their life however they were living their lives in between. But, you know, about four of them got COVID and were extremely sick, but eventually got over it. But she didn't, for whatever reason. And so you never know, you know, when it's when it's going to be you. And I didn't want to take that chance, you know. So got the vaccine and wanted the extra layer of protection. And I don't want to wear a mask the rest of my life because I can't breathe. You know, you're breathing in carbon monoxide. That's another reason why I don't spend a lot of time in places. I wear the mask where I have to, but I don't really go anywhere. But I would be uncomfortable, you know, if I worked and had to go back to a job. And I'm very blessed and happy, fortunate that my husband is able to work remotely. He does have to go in, like yesterday he had to go in. He's a secret agent. There's something secret he has to do once a quarter. But he gets up and goes in at 4 o'clock in the morning when there's hardly no one there, and he wears a mask, and he's in and out in an hour, and he's not really with anybody, just passing people. You know, he's the ghost, the secret ghost, but he's able to work from home. But, you know, the people that have to wear a mask all day inside a place, I don't think I could even do that. You know, I feel claustrophobic, but still have been doing the safety protocols and will continue to do so, even vaccinated for a while. I think outside, no matter what the CDC said, I guess, I'm really not around groups of people outside. We haven't been doing things like that. But like our trips, now that it's spring and it was a long-ass winter in Nebraska, excuse me, but now that we'll be able to take rides out to the country, you know, get out of town and go out to the country and take pictures and stuff, there's no people out there anyway. So I'm not going to be wearing a mask out there. But if I see, I'm not going to be going to places like the zoo and places where a lot of people congregate outside. So I'm just not ready for that. But I'm glad to have the vaccine behind me, and just wanted to give you a heads up, no pun intended, about the vaccine and different side effects we might experience. But personally, I still believe what I was finishing saying about the vaccine passport was that I've got mixed feelings on that. Usually I'm very independent, and I would be thinking that it was a violation of privacy. There's a lot of things I don't agree with at all politically that are going on right now, but and I don't know that the passport is is one of them. I don't know that, but I do think certain jobs, like if you work in a nursing home, for example, or where there is a vulnerable population, I guess I kind of do think that should be a term of employment. Because we saw what happens to vulnerable groups of people, particularly in that setting at the beginning of the virus. And so while I'd like to think that, you know, we don't dictate, we've got freedom and over what we do for our body, I have some mixed feelings. I think there's certain jobs that if you're working with a vulnerable group of people, particularly, say, a rehab center or a nursing home, assisted care facility, I think it's probably not a bad thing if you need to get the vaccine or a different line of work. That's just my feeling right now. So I don't know. What do you think about all of that? And then you can tell us about the article, and then we can talk a little bit about new reality.
Well, Kim, everything you say is, I find it just fascinating and wonderful, frankly. So I'm going to run through a couple of thoughts for you. One about this question of the, in no particular order, about the vaccine passport, that whole issue. I think what you're saying is very thoughtful and fair, totally thoughtful and fair. My feeling is that the solution may lie in some kind of honesty and transparency. I think it's very difficult if one moves away from honesty and transparency, and it gets more and more easy if you have an honest and transparent system. And what I mean by that is that I have been vaccinated. I would encourage people to investigate their health condition and select the vaccine that they feel best serves their goals. I will point out that some of the research that's just been announced in the last few days is that some of the two-shot vaccines, they're working on making them into single-shot vaccines. I think the Moderna CEO just said that. My view was, given my extreme circulatory disorders, that one shot would probably be safest for me. But I also know many people who are elderly who have embarked on the two-shot regime with no problem. My experience
parents.
Of the one-shot regime, which I did, is that the way I put it is one of the symptoms I got, and I'm curious, Kim, whether you felt this. Maybe this is part of your terrible headaches. But after I got my single-shot vaccine, in the following days, I felt as though, and bear in mind that the science is that this was a non-viable piece of a spike protein grafted onto a harmless cold virus, a dead, harmless cold virus. What I felt in the days following was as if every nerve and every cell in my body had like its eyes, like in a cartoon, its eyes were popping out on stalks.
No.
Looking at this non-viable protein and saying, what the hell is that? ! My whole system just felt completely overwhelmed. That feeling you described, Kim, of not being able to cognitively cope. Part of my lying around exhausted was I felt overwhelmed. Everything just felt, I was not on fire, just everything was on alert. That suggests to me that if my system was exposed to a viable spike protein, I would not survive that. That's my feeling about that. And so transparency and honesty in terms of the passport to me means that I'm very nervous about exposure. I'm living very quietly. waiting for the 29 days to build. I will certainly keep wearing a mask. That's what works for me. But yeah, when we move forward, and it's in California, the rates are quite low. If I want to go into a venue, if that venue cannot tell me honestly and transparently that everybody inside that venue has been vaccinated, that's fine. I will exercise my choice and I won't go in, because I'm happy to announce on the air I've been vaccinated. I expect any facility I go into to be honest and transparent with me about that. Now, if people feel that that's an intrusion into their civil liberties, I respect that completely, but I'm not going to be going into a facility that they're going into, because that's my choice. I want facilities that I visit, like restaurants or movie theaters, to be able to be honest and transparent with me. The other thing I will say, Kim, is the issue in terms of why can't we just go back to normal after we've had our vaccine individually. Please bear in mind that this is a moving target. 91% or 90X% effective at preventing hospitalization still means that 1 in 10 could be hospitalized. It's good. It's really good. It's a scientific miracle. But that's why I want a venue to be honest and transparent with me, because I don't really want to take a 1 in 10 risk, even if I've been vaccinated, that I'll be exposed and I'll be that 1 in 10 who still gets hospitalized or dies, because of my brain injury, feel that this is new reality. I don't want to take that risk. That's my choice. And one reason I don't want to take that risk is because of this issue of the moving target, which is we are dealing with the truly awesome, wondrous, and in some ways divine process of life itself, where when you have, for example, millions of cases in India, there are mutations that are occurring. So that 90X% protection rate is true of the variants that were being tested a year ago. And the difficulty is, if we don't all as a planet move forward together, folk in India may, and I love India, I gave my TED talk there, and they have their own unique social societal accomplishments and challenges, but they've got an awful lot of cases, which means an awful lot of mutations. And until those are worked out, and while people are traveling to and from internationally, that's been limited somewhat, but it's a wise move not to pick up the newspaper and read that there's a new mutation in town, and then read that there's a new mutation actually shown up in your town, and you've been exposed even though you've been vaccinated. So it's just a question. It's not talking about the rest of one's life, but until these iterations and mutations work their way through, and as you said, Kim, there will be new versions next year of the COVID vaccine. And as I'm saying, Moderna are busy trying to work on a single shot. I imagine that the other pharmaceutical companies are all working towards that same goal. What we're heading for, I'd always like to talk about the positive, because otherwise, as you say, Kim, it's not easy to breathe wearing a mask. I mean, I struggle with it, because just to tell you something that happened when I went to my hospital for my annual checkup, I was wearing my mask, and they're doing the various measurements. And one of the measurements they did was, I think it's called blood oxygenation, something like that. I'm not a doctor, but they put a thing, that thing on your finger that looks a little bit like ET, you know, it kind of glows blue, and they put it on your finger.
Yeah, that's right. What it is.
Right. Well, when they did that to me, the comment was made that mine was a little bit low. And then the nurse said, just in conversation, well, that's because you're stressed. And I said, really? And she said, yes, because you're wearing a mask. And that,
or because
the mask,
you're wearing a mask. Not only the stress, but you have a mask on, so of course you're getting less oxygen.
A bit less.
I'm sorry.
I gotta tell you, it's pretty miraculous. It is the miraculous divine process of life. I was amazed that my body is interactively and then it affects heartbeat, because the brain is picking up, oh my God, Simon is picking up a bit less oxygen from the air. I build heart, the brain sends a message, heart, you need to work a little bit harder because I need a bit more oxygen. This is the analog process happening in real time with life itself. So there are these stresses, but it is really important to stay the course, quite honestly, and understand those issues. I do want to touch on a couple of other things, if I may, Kim. Barrett's esophagus, while you were talking, because I find the pattern so interesting. It may be the COVID virus, but one aspect of of Barrett's esophagus can be linked with acid reflux. And what I find interesting there in terms of the pattern is I slipped into Rise and Shine because I tried with Rise and Shine to shoehorn in as much helpful things that helped me as I could that weren't really strictly related to my recovery from my catastrophic injuries. And there was one doctor who I was talking to about acid reflux. And it was kind of after the surgeon had operated, and I got a very rare thing. This particular doctor was fantastic. He gave me a solution that was the solution for me, because I was dealing with this acid reflux question, and I'm wondering whether that's partly because of brain injury. Because what the surgeon said to me was, put a 6x4, is it 6x4 inches? I forget, pieces of wood. They're called 6x4s or 6x2s. Can't remember now. He said, put one of those in under the head of your bed to elevate the bed. And I did that, and my acid reflux went away, and that's been years, except that for various reasons, I just had to make a change. And the new piece of wood that's under the head of my bed is slightly lower, just slightly lower. And the acid reflux has returned. So he's going to come back, the fellow who did it for me, and slightly, because he said, yeah, it was kind of half an inch less. So he's going to make it back to the way it was. But for somebody who's got something like Barrett's esophagus, which is quite serious, that might be something to ask a doctor. But I do wonder if there are listeners with brain injury who had the same experience as me, because before my brain injury, I never had this issue. Maybe it's the passing of the years. Maybe it's my injuries. But maybe there's something that's slightly changed such that I need that elevation. And the reason I was inclined to try it when the surgeon suggested it was I thought to myself, if I was living in the wild, caveman Simon, and I was looking for somewhere to lay down to sleep, would I lie down on an absolutely flat piece of land and stick, you know, a rock with some twigs on it as a pillow? And my honest answer is I don't think I would lie down on an absolutely flat piece of land. I think I'd lie down on a piece of land that was slightly sloping. Somehow that seems more comfortable. Because something that's absolutely flat, like we sleep on every night, seems to me, and then we prop ourselves up with pillows to try and create a sense of a slope.
Right.
So anyway, I put that out there as that thing. In terms of mental status after the vaccine and a new reality, I wrote to a friend of mine who's been a friend of mine for maybe 40 years. And I thought, this was just a couple of days ago, but somehow the virus, the vaccine, I somehow felt really alert, really aware. And I'm writing an email to him, And the words, Kim, they're flying into my keyboard. It's basically like I'm on a drug high. I don't take drugs, but as I imagine how it must be to be really high. Because
wow.
I thought I was writing something completely coherent. And anyway, my friend sent me back an email for the first time. This is literally after 40 years. So I'm not sure I understand what that sentence means. Well, that's strange.
Oh, my God.
So I look back at the sentence that I had sent to him. And, yeah, for somebody who's in a drug-induced high, maybe. But what I'd done was I'd taken this sentence. It was a bit like one of those sentences written in German, where you have one clause, another clause, another clause, another clause. It was about eight little clauses, and somewhere in that sentence was the point that I was making, and it was there. But
gosh.
I tell you that story because that's a new reality. I've never experienced that before, and so I had to explain, if you unwrap the Germanic interlocking phrases, you will see that I was saying that I wished X, Y, Z, as opposed to writing, what I'd done was write A, B, C, F, H, P, R, D. You know, the letter D was way down in the sentence. So it So I love, and the other thing I'll say about maintaining social distancing, I've got a few other points actually, is the Oscars, which I watched, which I realize are not of interest much outside the big, perhaps, Los Angeles. But they tried.
You and that's 12 others.
Yeah, me and 12 others. Exactly. Me and a dozen other people watched the Oscars. But it showed, they built the set on Union Station in downtown Los Angeles. Variety described the show, their comment, their one-line review, having been put up at Union Station downtown, was a train wreck. Which I thought was fair. I mean, very talented people tried very hard to deal with an award show trying to maintain social distancing and political correctness and everything else. And it did point to the very real difficulties of the world we're living in, the new reality. And it was pretty unwatchable, frankly. And I felt sorry for everybody involved because it wasn't for lack of effort or lack of talent. You wouldn't even have known that it was a train station that they were doing it in. They dressed everything up and they had an area outside where I'm sure everybody that was there had been tested. So they were doing it safe, but it's not entertainment. It's not a sense of community. And that, of course, is what everybody wants, especially with children. A couple of other points I want to make as I sort of wrap up, because you made such good comments, Kim. When I was sitting waiting for my shot, it was done very well by the local authority here near where I live in LA. And I got my shot, and then there was a tent where you sat for 15 minutes to make sure that you're not going to instantly die, basically. So that's a very important thing. If you're getting the vaccine, you must make sure for those first 15 minutes that you're somewhere where if you feel very whiffy, to use a non-medical term, you start feeling very squiffy. I think that's the term. You start feeling very squiffy. It is not the time to have stiff upper lip or say, I can battle through this because I'm a full-blooded young, you know, we full-blooded old, whatever. Don't try to battle through it. Just tell someone because there are simple things that can be done to save your life. But while I was sitting there for 15 minutes, there was a man sitting next to me who was very, very Los Angeles, very Hollywood. He was narrating every minute of his experience to somebody on his cell phone. So my mother asked me, because she had taken me down to the vaccination site, are you having a strange taste in your mouth? Because she was listening to this gentleman. He had just finished narrating how he had this really odd taste in his mouth. So I said to my mother, no, not at all. And about 4 minutes later, there was this really odd taste in my mouth. And the reason I'm saying that is that none of this are things to be scared of, because it is really strange when it happens. And then I started getting the other thing, the sense of separation from my surroundings, but not massively. I wasn't going to pass out or anything. And in fact, the public area were handing out bottles of water to people because it's important to drink water. But none of these are things that should stop anybody from getting the vaccination, as long as it's being done properly and it's the right one your provider is suggesting for you. And what I find interesting about the strange taste is that the COVID virus is known to inhabit the saliva duct and the saliva glands, and that's one route by which it can enter the brain, can enter the brain. There are other routes that we'll talk about in a moment because we still have time, which is great. But the fact that your friend Kim has had all these terrible issues, and what are they involving? They are involving possibly the esophagus, which is the conduit for saliva partly, and it is acid reflux. So this seems to be a virus that can inhabit the lungs, get into the lungs through the salivary thing. The vaccine itself seems to affect a sense of taste early on, which is what I was getting. So I think those are all the comments I want to make before I embark him on the article, which talks about the explanation or a possible explanation published yesterday in a magazine online called SciTech Daily. That's SciTechDaily. And the article's title is very important, I feel. It's How COVID-19 Worms Its Way Into the Brain, Explaining Baffling Neurological Symptoms. Now, this isn't a theory based on research. So, Kim, do you want me to jump into it? Can I explain one way is through saliva ducts, because the saliva glands do lead, I shouldn't say the glands, the ducts. There are tiny, tiny, hundreds and hundreds of tiny saliva ducts, some of which lead up inside the brain. So it's thought that that's one route. But this is, as of yesterday, a theory on a different way the COVID-19 may worm its way into the brain and explaining the baffling neurological symptoms. So shall I jump into that, Kim, or do you want to respond to what I just was saying?
No, go ahead. You don't have to explain it, but about the saliva and all, that's interesting because I didn't know anything about, my friend never had any acid reflux. After a brain injury, I did get it in reference to your comment. Mine wound up being more than a bed adjustment. I'm on a medication for it, unfortunately, but nothing they tried worked. Now, my friend and I, maybe she got that diagnosis wrong. They said a form of, but her thing is a fungus. It's a fungus in her lungs from the COVID. She never had any acid reflux thing, so that Barrett, whatever, maybe she misunderstood something because she's been really out of it with the disease, or the doctors were saying that, I don't know what relationship that particular diagnosis has to fungus, but, you know, again, when I asked her, she just said that the lungs were porous and that it's very easy for bacteria, fungus, and all kinds of gunk to get in there, and I can see where the saliva would have something to do with that, but also the circulatory, and because COVID chose to attack her respiratory system, her lungs, as opposed to the heart or the kidneys or the brain or something else, I was just surprised to hear the word fungus as a result of COVID. So I was just saying that what an incredible amount of ways this thing attacks and organs
yes.
that it attacks. And then you brought up the mutations, the variants, and you know, right now the UK variant is the one that there's the most of in our country. It's
yes.
the prominent one right now. And they're thinking that this vaccine, you know, is going to give us protection from that, where they're a little more iffy. And here I'm just doing a pass by political, it, only because, you know, in DAR I'm very involved in immigration and do genealogy and all of that. But the Brazilian variant and the African variant, Fauci has come right out and said, not so sure about that with the vaccine. So to keep the borders
yes.
open and let people coming in without being checked and being dispersed around the country seems very contrary to the message every 10 seconds of getting shots in as many arms of people as possible. It seems like an oxymoron, shooting yourself in the foot doesn't make sense. Those kind of things are very, very frustrating to me. And when you talked about the world, you know, having to get in lockstep to make this better, you know, my personal feeling right this moment, my personal feeling is that the borders should be shut. You know, the borders should be shut because there's an old saying I heard from a wise person once, you can't give away something you haven't got. And we're
yeah.
undermining everything you and me and the people that are going to get these shots and socially distancing and following all these protocols, everything we're breaking our ass to do to try to help ourselves and the rest of the country and not hurt other people, they are doing contrary by leaving the borders open and letting it get so overwhelmed that people are coming in who haven't been tested with a variant that our vaccines likely don't address. So that's another reason that, you know, you got to be careful of yourself and have responsibility, self, be responsible for yourself. And so they've told us what some safety protocols are, and until they get it together, you keep it together, because as Simon said earlier, the good news is, you know, we're coming to a point where we're going to be in a much better place. That's why I'd like to not see them undermine it. And I hope that when she gets around to going down and checking it out in June, there might be some changes made, because I really feel that is so contrary. If someone could explain it to me, I'd feel better. But just hearing it is like nails on a chalkboard to me with all the precautions we've done by not leaving our house for a year and a half, you know, and
yes.
having to wear a mask and doing all these things that we have to do that are mandates. But the people waltzing across the border illegally don't, they're not bound to any of what the citizens are bound to. That just doesn't make sense. So that's just my
yes.
opinion. The network, Simon doesn't necessarily share that. It's a frustration of mine.
No, I just haven't focused on it. To be honest with you, Kim, I just haven't focused on it because my focus has been pretty much on America and encourage the rest of the world. Yeah, encourage the rest of the world to do the right thing. And I agree, I don't know what the issues are, how, but I tend to agree with you. But I'll just take a cover because I'm running out of time, because this is sort of the
yep.
core of this, because I thought it'd be a very good reason for people to know why not to be complacent, because the core question is why bother? Because it's much easier not to bother. So this article, which I encourage everybody to look at online, if you look up the phrase Cytect alien worms its way into the brain, and this is a theory, it's not conclusive, but they say, it's saying new research offers an up-close view of how the virus that causes COVID can spread to the brain. Not must, not always, but can. The study helps explain the alarming array of neurological symptoms reported in some patients, as well as why some patients suffer severe neurological effects while others experience none at all. And just to digress, I have a family member in England. The whole family had COVID. They were very seriously sick, and now they're okay. But then there are people that Kim knows who are very seriously ill and may have life, they're long haulers. So here's what they found, that there's evidence that COVID can infect both the nerve cells that power our brains. That's, our brains are filled with neurons. So, but COVID can indeed infect both the nerve cells that power our brains, the neurons, and the cells in the brain and the spinal cord that support and protect the neurons. And those are called astrocytes. So if I just walk through, the amazing thing about this article, if you look online, is it shows a single astrocyte. Now that's the kind of a nerve cell that protects, is in the brain and spinal cord, and it protects neurons. So this is like the guardians of the galaxy, the astrocytes are the guardians. And the photo is of a single astrocyte cell showing an expression of the COVID receptor protein, which is called ACE2. And that means that the guardian of the universe, the guardian of the brain cells, has the receptor that says to the COVID virus, come on in and howdy. That's a big problem and a big finding. And then what the article goes on to say is, our findings suggest that astrocytes, the guardians of our galaxy, and that's my phrase for it, but the astrocytes are a pathway through which COVID causes neurological damage. He goes on to say, and this is Health Shreveport University, Louisiana State University, quote, this could explain many of the neurologic symptoms we see in COVID patients, which include loss of sense of smell and taste, disorientation, psychosis, and stroke. In the respiratory system, the lungs, COVID is known to infect a person's cell by grabbing hold of proteins on the cell surface, the ACE2. They know that there's lots of ACE2 receptors in our lungs. But it was unclear whether brain cells have the ACE2 receptor. So then it describes the process by which they found the ACE2 receptor and the studies confirmed that both astrocytes and neurons express the ACE2 receptor and that both cell types can become infected with COVID. Although astrocytes, those the guardians, were less likely to become infected. Astrocytes, that's the guardians, are the main gateway to the brain responsible for shuttling nutrients from the bloodstream to the neurons while keeping harmful particles out. By resisting infection, the guardians, the astrocytes, could help keep COVID out of the brain. Here's the problem. Then it goes on to say, but once the guardian cell is infected, they can easily pass the virus along to many neurons. So therefore, it says, while astrocytes, the guardians, display higher resistance to infection, so the guardians do their job, they are more resistant to the COVID virus, the neurons seem to be more susceptible. This suggests that only a few astrocytes getting infected could be sufficient for the infection to quickly spread to neurons and multiply quickly. These observations could explain why some patients do not have any neurological symptoms, others seem to have severe ones. So there we go. So that, I think, is very important for people to understand, that you could know somebody who bounced straight back with minor symptoms, excuse me, from COVID. But if you, as a member of the brain injury community, were infected, if a few of your guardian astrocyte cells do not resist the infection, that astrocyte cell can then infect many neurons and to use a odd phrase, then I'm afraid you're off to the races with this infection and what it can do to your lungs and what it can do to the brain. Because the lungs, by the way, understand that the lungs have many ACE2 receptors. So that's why so many cases it gets into the lungs. But there's no way in the next phase of research they will start trying to understand why certain astrocytes do not hold the line, are not guardians, and fight it off completely. But I hope that's helpful to people and encourages folk to understand that until we know what determines whether your case will be serious, catastrophic, or harmless, it really is a good idea to take the steps that your doctor recommends and stay safe.
Yes, absolutely. And thank you for sharing that. So I think that's all good stuff. I was looking for something because we're rounding the bend, but yes, I hope that everybody's safe. And one of the things I was talking to someone in the chat, it seems as things are slowing down, you know, here in the beginning, everybody had to make an appointment to get a vaccine. And now, as things have slowed down a little and the initial rush is gone on the weekend, several of those county sites are just open for people to be able to walk in. And another suggestion somebody gave me, although I didn't need to do it, but I know people that have, is each of those vials holds about 6 shots in it. And they hate to waste the vaccine and have to throw it away. And so if you've got a Walgreens or a CVS or a grocery store you know of that are giving vaccines, you can phone them toward the end of the day, you know, maybe an hour from them closing, kind of a thing, and just ask them, you know, if they have vaccine available, because they'd much rather give you the vaccine than toss it, you know, at the
end
of the day.
Great advice.
Yeah, and it's worked for a lot of people. You know, the drugstores have had a vial that, you know, they've maybe given 3 shots of, there's 2 left, and, you know, they hate to waste it and throw it away if somebody comes in. You know, this was even happening way back when, before they opened it up to all ages, when they were just in specific ages, like our folks' age. You know, I had a couple people that, like, took their parent. They didn't purposely cut in line to get their shot first, but they took their parent, and because of the appointment schedule or just the line the way it wasn't, you know, the shot person offered, you know, have you had your vaccine? Do you want, you know, do you want it? Because they had the vaccine, you know, the vial was opened. And so they went ahead and did that. And so you may not necessarily have to make an appointment at this point. Like I said, according to the news, when we got our shots, it was the mad dash was on. It was actually they had gotten out of the older age bracket and were down to the next oldest age bracket, which is ours. And we had to make an appointment during that time. And it was like we had our second appointment set up. They set that up when you get your first one. They set up the second one. So we had our second appointment set up. But after we got our first one is when the administration, they opened it to every age, 16 and older for one vaccine, 18 and older for another vaccine. But basically they opened it up. They didn't, we were in a race against the variant and against a lot of other things at that point. So instead of that orderly going by decades, you know, and doing it like that, all of a sudden it was like, okay, they're off. No matter what your age, run, don't walk, get your shot, run, don't walk, get your shot, get your shot. And a lot of people did, you know, tons of people did. You saw the numbers, but now, like I said, I heard on the local news and the national news, it was slowing down a little. And I heard on ours that, in fact, the place that we went, which was run by a hospital for the county, in a location, that on the weekends now, people can just walk in. They don't need to have a shot. And I will tell you, for any of you that are maybe nervous about it, like me, that was more people than I had been around in the last year and a half. But when I say that, I'm going to tell you that they had the tape, which I've never seen because I haven't even been in a grocery store. A lot of you have and will be familiar with this. I was not. But there were people there, but everything was really spread out. And the distancing was well taken care of, where you didn't feel close to anybody. And everyone was masked. And yes, I think they all make you wait that 15 minutes after in another room, but it went very quickly. The whole process was really very quick. It wasn't like you were waiting for any length of time. You know, they had so many booths spread out that were giving vaccines that, you know, boom, 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 you know, you were in, got your shot, were directed to a room, totally different room, on your way out to sit for 15 minutes to make sure you didn't have an anaphylactic reaction, and then you were out of there. So
same here in LA, Kim. It was great, no problem, and actually painless, no pain. I hardly felt the injection.
Me neither, either time. You know, and like you said, my folks. Both, you know, we explained some of the things that we had, reactions we had for our shots, but my folks both had the vaccine and they didn't have any trouble with it except the requisite sore arm from having a shot, you know, and maybe feeling a little tired for the next day, but they didn't have any issues or side effects at all with their shot. So for that extra layer of protection, I think it's a good thing. But I guess we just have about 6 minutes left. I was looking for something that I can't find. I wonder if he snuck in here and hit it. I hope not. Huh. Let's see. Where would I have put it? I do want to welcome, there might be a person, you know, just a couple little odds and ends. I met a new friend that will come on the show sometime, and I haven't had a chance to talk to him on the telephone yet. I just met him a couple of days ago through another friend, but if Joe is listening, you know who you are. I just want to tell you hello and prepping for the show and doing the show. And I've just, since we got acquainted for a moment on Facebook, I've just had a swamp this week. I had a lot of things going on. We will be in touch, but I want to welcome you to the show if you're listening. Joe will be telling us his story, but, you know, we've talked about all the different ways that we've gotten our brain injuries, and his was one I had not heard of before. He had gotten a sports injury and was taking the drug Vioxx, and he happened to have an allergic reaction. This is just a fact, so I can say it. They had to recall it. They got sued for it. It's public record. Vioxx, he was taking Vioxx and had a reaction to it, and it gave him such a severe brain injury that this young man was unable to walk, talk, eat, function. I mean, he severe brain injury and spent a long, long time in rehab, and he worked so hard in rehab that he's able to walk now. He's made a couple videos that are very funny. Looks like Joe's got a really good sense of humor, and he's very interested in writing a book about his situation. So our mutual friend asked me if I'd talk to Joe about that, and of course I'll visit with him about that. And it's just a testament to the resilience and how hard some people work, you know, to fight, you know, the brain injury. He's really fought it hard and done a heck of a job. So I just wanted to say hi to Joe, if he's out there listening. And other than that, Craig, our founder, I'm sitting here scrolling through the songs, and I think I'm just going to play. The one I'm looking for isn't here, but I was talking about a different song. I'm going to play us out tonight. I want to thank you, Simon, as always, for being on the show tonight. I hope, you know, we're not going to continue to talk about it, but this COVID has been a reality, and tonight, rather than talking as much about COVID, the disease, though you got to touch on it, we addressed the vaccine a bit, and that's timely because, you know, there wasn't one yet. You know, when we were doing a couple shows ago, talking about other things, you know, those vaccines were, what, maybe barely getting started or something, and so, like I said, at this point, you know, there were a lot of people on the fence, and a lot of people have had one or both at this point. So I think it was good that we brought it up. But again, our founder here, if you want to help the program out a little bit, Craig's going to be going on tour. I don't know exactly what that's going to look like, but in August, they just released a 3-album set called, what's that called in the Bible at the end? Not resurrection, but anyway, VR Insane.
I'm drawing a blank.
No, that's okay. I'm just going to give you the band's website and play the song because we're running out of time. Rapture, I believe, is the name, but a 3-record set sort of a thing. It's not a record, but that many songs worth. It's a huge undertaking that they just released. The website is VTHEE, the letter R, insane.com, VRinsane.com. So I encourage you to check it out. I'm going to close it out with a song that I really like. It's called Ghost. Good night and God bless everyone. I'll see you next week. Thank you, Simon. Good night to you. And
thank you,
I'll
Kim.
Be in touch.
Cool.
that was Night Tree by BruleRecords.com. B-R-U-L-E Records.com. They're a Native American band and have a zillion great albums. Smooth Grooves Like That. That's Nicole, who plays the flute. Amazing flute player. But again, you can find them at Brulé Records. That's the title cut off of their Night Tree record, Nicole's Night Tree record. I think I'm going to maybe close this out, doing a little overtime into a few tunes you might not have heard for a long time, because we're in spring, and she is, it's really ironic that 10 years ago when I started Brain Injury Radio, it started actually before Brain Injury Radio when I wrote my book, and I do want to mention that you can find on Amazon or my website, inaflash.org, if you go to the book tab, it will give you links that will take you directly to Amazon for the book, the ebook, or the audiobook. For the month of, for Brain Injury Awareness Month, which was March and April, because it was my birthday month last week, I marked down my books for a special sale over soon. I think we just have a couple days left in the month, so if you've ever had an interest, check it out. But the first indie musician I found, and she actually was the song, her song, Guardian Angel, is the one I used for my book trailer. And then when I wound up getting this radio gig, she was my first independent musician to come on the board and has been here ever since. She was happy to let me play her music. If you check out Leah West, L-E-A-H, leahwest.com, and also check her out on YouTube. She's got some amazing YouTubes. But the irony of all ironies is she was a single musician at the time when we met, and didn't know anything about brain injury, was just a very nice, giving person who, when she heard what I was doing about writing my book and then how that led to radio, was willing to let me play her music. By and by, she got married a few years back, they had a beautiful little son, and her husband, young, healthy folks, both of them, he went out for a bicycle ride and had an aneurysm and died. Now, I don't know, you know, about karma and the way that the world flows and goes, but like I say, Leah knew nothing about brain injury. She's been being played on Brain Injury Radio for the 10 years that I've been here, and then brain injury touched and has profoundly affected her life and her little boy's life by being maybe 1 year old when he lost his father. So, while we've all heard of diabetes and cancer and heart disease, 2.8 million people a year have a brain injury. And yet, so few people know much about that. In the 10 years I've been here, people know a lot more than they did. But shockingly, in the traditional medical model, as well as out amongst people, I'm a little disappointed that a lot more isn't known. And so we carry the message. Anyway, I'm going to play a song of Leah's now because it's timely. I always have songs of hers on my board, but I hope those of you who are in four-season weather like me are probably in hog heaven right now after the long winter that seemed even longer because a lot of us were in for it due to COVID. So it was not only winter and yucky, but we couldn't go out and go to places that we have in years past. So spring has been so welcome this year. This is Leah West with, you guessed it, spring. That was Leah West with Spring. Our thoughts and prayers go out to her and her son for their health and happiness. And grief is a funny thing. It comes and goes at some really odd times. But before I have to take that song out, I hope we have a long spring. I don't know, you can maybe, the wind's picked up outside. I sit by a window when I do the show, and it's so nice to feel the fresh air, and I've got a new wind chime out there. I don't know if you can hear it or not, but I like to listen to it. Now I really am going to go with a last song that I really like. Again, it's by Craig, and it is very poignant for all of us at this point. Who can't say it's been a long year? Good night, everybody.
Been a long year since I've seen these colors in the tree, my dear. It's been a long time, such a long time here, babe. Maybe this year things will change. It's been a long year, and I think it's time to leave this place. It's been a long time, such a long time here, babe. Somehow every year's the same. It's been a long year since I cried. Let the tears sing to me like a lullaby.
Been a long year.